Good day, nerds, and welcome to a Cantina Conversation today that we have with two artists, Tim Malloy and John Baynard. And I'm also assisted in this interview with our favorite guest host, Sean Mullen from DontFeedTheWolf.com. Now, this whole conversation is really to introduce what is a new and upcoming NFT project from two great artists. So whether you are an experienced NFT investor and collector, or you've really just heard about it and haven't dove into the crazy world of NFTs like I recently have, this interview will show that this project in particular is led by some phenomenal artists that have a great history and journey that they go into a pretty good depth in at the beginning of the show. And then we transition into the actual project itself, which is fascinating. And it has a plan to mint or create these NFTs here in November, so you can still get involved and join this journey before the initial sales. And then if you do so, they have a fascinating roadmap for the future as far as tying in other NFT projects into this, producing greater content down the road, maybe a game, maybe some animation. This is really just the start. So I hope that through this conversation, you become a little fascinated with the Toddler Pillars, this very unique art and unique community, and either build upon or start your NFT phase. Without any further ado, here's our interview with Tim Malloy and John Baynard. All right. Well, nerds, we're here with a Cantina Conversation with two people that I am absolutely fascinated with right now. Sean's fascinated with. This is occupied what I would say is an absurd amount of time from both me and Sean recently. And I don't know if I've been so involved in something in a very long time. And we're excited to have Tim Malloy and John Baynard here to discuss their project for Toddler Pillars, a new NFT project still in the early stages. And I'm really excited to dive into the history for both you as artists and the future of where we're going in this NFT world. John, Tim, I guess the first thing I'll ask is, are you guys all right? Are you sleeping? Have you slept? How are we doing today?
Well, I'm partially okay. Yeah, I'm definitely surviving. Yeah, sort of. I was telling Sim privately before, like the pressure involved in this sort of time, like this time crunch, has got me fluctuating between a state of anxiety, exhilaration, and mania. Yeah, but I'm enjoying it. Yeah.
Great. How are you, Tim?
I'm sort of in the same boat, you know, like once, if I spend too much time thinking about how much work I have to do, I start to feel a little bit stressed. I start getting some stabbing pains in the torso around the, in my organs, in my heart, but my veins start pumping on the forehead. But if I just sit down and start working, then, you know, I get into the flow and I'd start pumping out the art, and, you know, before I know it, the day's gone by and come up with some crazy stuff, and it all, you know, it's a process. But yeah, no, it's good. I think we're both good. We're happy. We're excited, I think, is a good way to put it.
I think excitement is bigger than all of those negative things we just talked about. For me, like, I am like more excited and more inspired by this project than anything I've ever been involved with. So, I mean, that's definitely like, you know, if I die of a heart attack at the end of this, then I think it's okay.
It's
like,
it's going out on a high.
At least I did.
It was worth it.
At least I want it to mint first, you know?
Yeah.
And then we're okay. Yeah. And apparently I have to make an actual Toddler Pillar sculpture. So I guess I'll die after that, you know?
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, well, promise me you'll never die.
Oh, I will never die.
As long as there's any Toddler Pillars alive, John yeah, lives
we were
forever.
Just talking about the we were just talking about the Highlander before, so yeah.
There can only be one.
Yeah. Well, I'll chop off all the heads of all the other Toddler Pillars, don't worry.
Well, I guess you know, we've got to start somewhere before we get into this great kind of community that you've built around the project and the future of the project. But to get started, I guess we can quickly start with a bit of your traditional art journey that's brought us here. And John, if you would, you know, give us a moment of really where you started as an artist and how it's grown a bit here.
Okay, well, I guess it's probably a good way to start, because Toddler Pillars were one of the first things I did as a sort of I don't know, as a kind of adult practicing artist, you know, when I was getting out into the world, and there was sort of like, I guess the Toddler Pillar sculpture series that I started 20 years ago were like, I've written this in various places throughout the project, but I guess they were the first thing that put me on the map as an artist. Like, they were my first success and the first thing that kind of, I guess, gained me some notoriety in the art world. But I, in a sense, like more in the, just in the weird internet meme world than the art world, because when I made these Toddler Pillar, like, I mean, I was painting and drawing. I was mainly drawing. Like, drawing was my passion. Toddler Pillars were just something that sort of accidentally happened when I was stoned, you know.
awesome.
So you know, and I'm talking as someone here who's like 10 years clean and sober, so you know, that's not ongoing. But I was very stoned when I first made my first Toddler Pillar. I don't know why I had so many doll parts lying around, but I kind of just you know, I it just sort of made sense to piece them together and sort of voila, yeah, they looked like a centipede, and I was kind of amused and in love, and I just kind of followed that concept. I guess I'll start with, so I put the first few together, and actually I think the first one was exhibited in a museum in my hometown, Albury, and so I was a part of this show called The Boys Room, and these the first Toddler Pillars, I don't think they even had a name back then, were in this sort of, there were these monsters that were in this kind of exhibition, and then I sort of just knuckled down and sort of got right into it and made a bunch of them. And they were fairly simple and fairly small at the beginning. They were kind of like little scorpions and centipedes and stuff. And over the years, it became more and more complex. But ironically, the really complex ones weren't the ones that went viral. But the ones that went viral and were memed a lot were the simple ones, the earlier yeah. ones that were made in like 2002 and 2003. And they still go viral to this day. Like, they pop up. Like, I get tagged in like some, you know, Facebook, you know, account that has like millions of followers. Like every, I don't know, maybe every 4 months or something.
Oh, really?
Like someone shared like a Toddler Pillar, and it's got like millions of likes and all this stuff, but they don't credit me. Like, it's just like, it usually says something like kill it with fire, or like what the fuck is this, or whatever. And then I've got like five people in the comments saying, hey, John, it's your Toddler Pillars, you know, and yeah. tagging me there. And that's been happening since the early 2000s. Although that was in the early 2000s, I think, well, I guess MySpace was around, but there wasn't
yeah.
much else. Yeah. yeah.
Not much virality going there.
And, you know, they got on the front page of Reddit a few times, and, you know, all that sort of Boing Boing and, you know, yeah. all these sort of popular blogs. And they were published in, I remember that they were published in Maxim magazine. Maxim's like some kind of weird, cheesy men's magazine or something.
Yeah. yeah.
But it wasn't just that.
You've made it if you made it to Maxim, Tom.
yeah, and it said like, I remember one of the headlines said, do people eat their children? And then it was just, well, John Baynard does blah 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 Toddler Pillars, you know. And it's just like, like, they were just, it was like it wasn't really an art thing, it was more like I was an anomaly, you know. And it wasn't just Maxim in America, they published it in the Maxim magazine in like 20 different countries with different languages. And I remember some of them were quite raunchy. Like, they were not the Toddler Pillars themselves, but there were like some pretty pornographic Maxim magazines in Europe. Yeah. So I've still got them at home, but, and they were published in FHM, and they were published yeah. FHM magazine as well. And, Bizarre magazine, which I think was owned by FHM or Maxim as well. And they even appeared on the news in various places. I don't know. They went pretty mental for a while there. yeah. And then I guess it kind of, in a sense, it started my journey towards the point where I am now, where I've got, like, you know, I guess I'm somewhat known as an artist, and I've got, I don't know, it's kind of the launch pad for what I've created in the brick and mortar commercial gallery that I've got now. Yeah. Like, I own and run an art gallery. So, I think that was, I feel like that was like the trajectory. Yeah. it's all related.
I guess, Tim, how did you really you get started, or where did you start your journey and kind of run into what is now the toddler pillars?
It's sort of funny, you look back at the series of events, and it's like, you know, where does it start? My brain always thinks of this moment when I was maybe three or something, pulling a Dali book off my mother's bookshelf, and I don't know, just probably being a bit warped from an early age with art and stuff, with that sort of tone of art and that sort of just that weirdness. But I've just been drawing and making art and comics since I was really young. I started self-publishing little zine-y comics when I was still in high school with a little group of friends, and then I went on to study animation in Auckland. This is in New Zealand. So I studied animation for about 4 years, and while I was doing that, I was really good. At the time, we had something called the artist's wage in New Zealand, which was like, it was just the unemployment benefit, but if you could sort of vaguely prove you were making art, they left you alone. So
I mean, it was a good, kind of fascinating. It's a fascinating concept I'm fully on board.
I mean, it was good. It was a good, amazing. Good period.
Yeah.
A lot of people in the early 20s, you know, that time we were all on the artist's wage, like every single person I knew, certainly everybody in the house I lived in. And at that time I started, just experimenting with some new sort of ways of making art. There were a few psychedelic experiences and over that period of time. And I came up with a new sort of series of comics that I started publishing in the university magazine up there, Kraken magazine. And that's when my sort of breakthrough main character, Mr. Unpronounceable, was created, who, you know, that's a long story in of itself, but that was the thing, I think, that, I moved to Melbourne, probably it was in my late 20s, I think. And very, very soon after I got to Melbourne, I was doing some cartoons for a street press magazine. And I remember sitting outside having a coffee with the editor, showing him whatever comics I'd been doing for him. And some guy sort of, people were walking past, but he pointed somebody out and said, "Oh, that guy, you've got to meet that guy." You know, he kept walking. And I was like, "Oh, who's that?" He goes, "Oh, that's John Baynard. He'll love your stuff." And I was like, "Oh, right." And I didn't think much of it because, it was a bit of a crazy time, lots going on. But then I met John at a party, I think. I don't know, just sort of the arts music kind of scenes in Melbourne at that time, just lots going on. But John was heavily involved in sort of a group of people who were doing a lot of, the banner that for me that it all goes under is weird art, but, surrealism and visionary art and all of that. But it's weird art. And then I think I showed John one of my Mr. Unpronounceable comics, and he really, really liked it. And I think at that time he was just starting to publish his art books, the Metamorphosis series, and then the gallery sort of thing happened. And I've been involved in exhibitions with John. John's been a really tireless advocate of so many great artists, and I often feel quite like the weakest link in the chain sometimes in the group shows, because I've been up on the wall next to people like Chet Zarr and all of these people who are sort of these big American artists, and then my little silly watercolors on the wall. But that's the loose trajectory to where it is now. But we've been kind of in and out of each other's lives since really quite soon after I moved.
Is that 15 years ago? I think it's about 15 years ago. Yeah.
About that now. We're old.
we are old. Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
We're 15 years more dead than we were then.
That's a great way to put it.
Closer to death. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ken, you'll have to, include a link or whatever to John's gallery so people can look up and see all the artists that Tim was talking about that are featured in that gallery as well.
Absolutely.
Of course, everything to this, but yeah.
So, I mean, should I talk about the gallery?
Go ahead.
Shall I introduce the idea of the gallery? So, it's kind of an accidental gallery. It's just a big mistake, a wonderful mistake. So what happened is... when I first, a very happy accident sounds like something a bit perverse, but anyway,
it's Bob Ross.
Oh yeah, that's not what I was thinking.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you there. I was thinking about
a daydream equivalent of a wet dream. Is that a happy accident? No.
Oh my
gosh. Sorry. John's still thinking about those Maxim porns he's got sitting in a closet somewhere.
No. I shouldn't have gone there. Okay. That never happened to me. Anyway, so I guess I was on the internet fairly early as far as like artists go. Like I created my own personal website in 2001 or 2002. I don't know. I guess that was kind of early. You know, most artists, I already knew, like I'd already kind of had a fairly, a bit of a sort of network of people who created sort of surreal art at that point. Like we're all very much into underground comics and, you know, we grew up on Robert Crumb and all this weird perverse shit and, and, all the and good stuff. The fabulous furry freak brothers and, you know, but also just, you know, big fans of Dali, H.R. Giger, you know, M.C. Escher, whoever else. And somehow there were all these people in Albury who, you know, this small, relatively small town who had found each other, who, you know, we used to sit around in cafes and draw this weird shit together. And I created this, this website, which originally was just like, I think I called myself Johnny Baynard back then. It was Johnny Baynard's personal website. And then I started like, cause my friends were useless at putting themselves out there. I started sort of putting guest galleries on them for their work. So it was like Johnny Baynard's, art. And then I think I called it the Baynard Bazaar. And then it had, I don't know, they went through lots of different iterations, but it had like, a few other artists on there who were just like friends of mine, with their little guest galleries. And I moved to Melbourne around that time and started meeting more and more people who were making this weird art, and it sort of became a bit of an obsession. Like this was all at the same time that the toddler pillars had sort of gone viral, and I was you know, I mean, toddler pillars are not my primary sort of art form. My primary art form is drawing and painting, but the toddler pillars is the thing that I guess yes. I became branded and known for, just because they're a bit more gimmicky, I guess, just a bit accessible and just like weird, I guess. I think that's why. But what happened is I became so obsessed with seeking, like it wasn't only my friends I was adding to this site anymore. I was seeking out artists who made sort of weird underground sort of surreal art in Melbourne. And then one day I thought, this is no longer my website. This is the Underground Australian Art Collective. And that's what I called it at that point. And I got involved with this larger network of artists, musicians, performers, whatever, called Angel Circus. And we used to put on fortnightly events. I did a lot of local curation, you know, of different other people's galleries. And anyway, in 2006, I decided, I mean, the Underground Australian Art Collective had become a fairly high traffic website. It was like a bit of a, like, I don't know, I'd sort of marketed it to the point where it was receiving a lot of traffic, and a lot of international artists who were really amazing, like, were asking if they could get involved somehow and be featured. So I decided to turn it into the International Surreal Art Collective. It was always called the Baynard International Surreal Art Collective, or the Baynard Underground Australian Art Collective. I was always sticking my name in front of it. and then that kind of opened the floodgates. And shortly afterwards, I had like 600 featured artists on there. And this was like before Facebook existed. So there wasn't really a centralized place where you could see all of these amazing artists, except my website became that. It became so high traffic and such a popular website that I was constantly attacked by Russian hackers. You know,
well, that's how you know, like, you made it. That's it. Yeah.
So that was really stressful, actually. So, you know, I had a web developer who was like just always like, you know, on the job, basically, because our website would occasionally be replaced with all of this weird propaganda and stuff.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but anyway, I guess it became a bit of a financial burden in a way. There was no income from it. So I thought, how can I make money out of this passion project in a way that's actually really interesting to me as well? And I thought, well, maybe book publishing. So I started publishing books, and I also started selling prints by some of the artists and all this sort of stuff. And that did quite well for a while. And it wasn't just that I wanted to make money from the books I was really passionate about. I don't know, I felt like, you know, the internet was this kind of really sort of temporary thing. You know, whatever was on the internet could be gone tomorrow, whereas a book is forever. Yeah. And I just love the idea of documenting this movement, this international movement of surreal figurative artists. And so I did a series of metamorphosis books, which had 50 different artists in each book. And then I published a series of monographs, like one for Laurie Lipton, one for Chris Cooksey, a quite well-known artist in the States, and one for Chetzar. But at some stage during that whole process, the global financial crisis happened, and the distributors, the booksellers, everyone went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And Taschen came in and made books, art books, like ridiculously cheap, so that, you know, you couldn't compete with that. The book thing just became less and less viable, I guess. And at the same, during that whole process, I was also curating shows in Santa Monica in LA, and I was also curating shows in New York, and, you know, and I was going over there and spending time with people over there. But to cut a long story short, because it is a fairly long story, so I got to meet all these artists that I'd been promoting for years, and I had a pretty significant social media presence with this Bain Art stuff, like, you know, like 500,000 followers on Facebook and 250,000 on Instagram and blah, 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 all that sort of stuff, a big mailing list. And the books were no longer making money, or not enough money to sustain the projects. So I launched a Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter was geared towards basically continuing curation in America at all these galleries that I've been working with, and paying people for content for the website, paying for the website, web developers, all this stuff. And I think I was asking for like 26, for a period of 5 years, and that would include like, you know, flying overseas to attend the shows and all this stuff, doing a few shows every year. So it's $26,000 Australian. And the artists, I asked the artists if they could get involved by, I don't know, providing a reward for the backers of the Kickstarter. And they just like, there was so much goodwill that had been created through all the different things that I'd done over the years, that the rewards that they provided were insane. Like, they were just all these original artworks and cool shit, and prints. And that $26,000 came in within a space of under 24 hours. And, wow. And so I don't know, my wife, who's my ex now, but still my best friend, who also runs and owns the gallery that I'm about to segue into with me, said that maybe we can announce a stretch goal. If we make a certain amount of money, we can open a gallery. And and we did that, and we opened a gallery, and that was, I don't know, 5.5 years ago, I think.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty wild journey to make yourself there into the actual physical gallery space.
Yeah.
The artwork's phenomenal. And, you know, and then I guess somehow all of this still takes us to the project at hand here, and getting into this nerd tech space, into NFT art, the transition of the physical medium to what, you know, still many people just don't understand NFTs. It took me a really long time, and I'm a very tech centered guy. I run a nerd tech podcast, and for a very long time, just couldn't wrap my head around, NFTs. I guess I'll go, you know, Tim, let's, what would be your elevator pitch? Like, how do you sell somebody on the fact that NFTs, that they're a worthwhile endeavor, that it's not some weird fad today? I'm going to put you right on the spot.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So I'll tell you this. It feels like it was about 100 years ago, the amount of work I've been doing for this project, but I think it was only about 2 or 3 weeks ago. NFTs were really not something I was thinking about. And since that time, I've been grinding so much, I haven't had any more time to think about it or to you know, like, I'll tell you what I am seeing is a huge amount of passion and excitement from this community that we've built up around this project in such a short amount of time. I'm still wrapping my head around the NFT thing. I know what it means as an artist, you know, in terms of, you know, you put your work out there in the world as a traditional piece, and somebody, you know, maybe I become a more popular artist in the future and somebody sells my work for a lot more money than I sold it to them. And, you know, you don't get any cut of that as a traditional artist. Right. It's, you know, like I've been selling my little paintings on Instagram for like, you know, $50 a pop. Like that's how I've been scraping by since the pandemic hit, when I was working in a day job. But as an artist, the idea of NFTs is exciting because of that, you know, you get a little slice of future sales, which is how it's supposed to work anyway. You know,
yeah. Lifetime royalties.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't work like that as a traditional artist. It's meant to, but when you're at
we've got a law in Australia people. Where that's meant to you're meant to have receive royalties from secondary sales in Australia, or at least I think that's the thing for Indigenous artists because they get ripped off so much. Because they sell their, like Australian Indigenous artists sell their work for a few hundred bucks and then people resell them for like hundreds of thousands of bucks. So like
straight to the gallery that sells it for $100,000. I'm still wrapping my head around it too. But I have the enthusiasm for this stuff is off the charts and this group that we're in. So I mean, I don't know, like, there must be something to it.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned there about the control that artists have as far as being able to just be compensated for the remaining time. I think it's such a important transition. It's one of the first things that when I talk to people about NFT art, I finally got to a point where I just said, I guess it isn't any different. You know, people will always make the claim about, oh, well, can't I just download that JPEG anyway? And I own the same art as you. Well, I could also find a lot of people to copy the Mona Lisa, and I can get prints of all kinds of art, different things that people will pay for at various conventions or whatever else.
I'd compare the JPEG analogy not to the original Mona Lisa, but maybe to, so just say an artist, like a really well-known artist, releases a signed limited edition print of one of their images. And you could compare that to someone bootlegging a print that hasn't been signed or even touched by that artist.
Right.
That's the JPEG. Yeah. You know what I mean? And prints can become quite valuable if it's the right artist, you know, especially if it's like a one of one, you know, then it's like, it's, I mean, for digital artists, a lot of digital artists and I guess the NFT space is primarily full of digital artists. Previously, they had been selling one of one prints of their artworks, which were essentially their original, you know. But sure, anyone with access to the high resolution image could probably make just as nice a looking image, but it wasn't authenticated by that artist. It isn't the original, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and we care about ownership. Like we do as people, we care about being the person who has the authentic one. It's not about necessarily just the image hanging on a wall or the image, you know, that I can show people on my phone or whatever people want to do with it. It is that act of ownership. Provides this community, provides a kind of a tether to the artist that we passionately follow, the art that we find inspiration from. I don't think that goes away. Yeah. And I don't think fundamentally that's any different in digital art.
I don't think
in the NFT
is,
form.
No. And as somebody on the other, on like the artist side of it, like I can't tell you how, this goes back to the traditional sort of, you know, watercolor paintings and everything that I've been doing as well. But just the amount of gratitude I have for just other people like me who feel something, anything, even if it's revulsion, but more often a positive feeling when they see the work and they reach out and they want to connect. And over the course of this goddamn pandemic and the lockdown and stuff, I've made some, you know, they say, you know, internet friends are real friends. I've made some really good friends who I haven't seen their face or heard their voice. You know, the amount of connection that their art creates, it's a real thing. And you know, I hear from a lot of people, oh, you know, you're so friendly, like so many artists are, you know, really distant or they don't respond, and I'm just a person, you know, like I'm grateful for their connection. Is that's why I'm doing it, you know.
Yeah,
I'm that's why I've always done it. I want to be part of the world, and I want to you know, I used to talk about it when I was high back in the day, like or drunk or whatever at 3 a.m. You know, it's like you're throwing a rock into a pool and the ripples go out and you never know how those ripples interact with other ripples. And, you know, you can, I'm not saying you can change the world, like, you know, save it from this or that sort of disaster, but you can influence things for the better through art. And I think from my side of things, I hope that like that those little connections that you make between stuff that comes out of my brain onto the page or onto the screen and into somebody else's eyes and into their brain, like, that's where the magic is. And I think that's what's important about that sort of chain of custody or connection, like you were saying.
Definitely. And I'd as just to cut in real quick, I'd say too, like, you know, being in this community that we're in right now is already a small, like, an example of that, is like you're seeing the energy and the different kind of people that are being brought into this space because of the art, you know, and things like that. Yeah. And the conversations that are being had. It's amazing.
Should we talk about the Toddler Pillar project? I wonder.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, we definitely should.
Please, let's do. So yeah,
we forgot about that. Yeah, I mean, we keep alluding to it, but should we talk about it?
Yeah. So, John, I know really you were the driving force as far as, you know, bringing Tim along and converting this over. So, how did you get the project started, and where are we taking this?
Well, I mean, I'll briefly say that I've been sort of really into crypto since 2017, although admittedly, like everyone else, I lost a bit of money back then. and I ignored it during the bear market, which I'm really kicking myself for. There was a bit of trauma there. But yeah, I guess I noticed this NFT thing kind of blowing up while I was getting, I read the, what is it? You know, about the cycles, the Bitcoin cycles just before Bitcoin just took off again. And I was totally convinced it was going to happen. So I did get in, which I got in before the big leg up, last year. So I bought some Bitcoin, although I started as a bit of a Bitcoin maxi because I was like, I love the idea of Ethereum. But I got burnt on all alt, or what I was calling shit coins at the time.
Yeah, everybody.
In 2017. So I thought, okay, I'm only doing Bitcoin now. I'm Bitcoin, you know. And I was listening to all the Bitcoin maxi garbage and I was really into it. And then, I don't know, Ethereum's just so interesting and amazing, like what's being created, like this kind of international supercomputer and it's distributed supercomputer. And I guess the thing that really made me fall in love with Ethereum again, because I was in love with it, I was very intrigued by it in 2017, was this whole NFT explosion. And I guess, to be perfectly frank, when I first saw all these people I knew making absurd amounts of money, all these artists, I thought of it as a bit of a cash grab. I thought I could make some money. Yeah. And so I thought I'd better get into this NFT thing. It wasn't even money. It was like, I want to make some Ethereum, you know?
Yeah,
I need to accumulate this asset because it's getting expensive and I don't want to spend my money on it. So why don't I spend my art on it? And so I started getting involved and then I was just like, fuck, the community and the passion here is just like, I just fell in love with the actual culture of, just how passionate everyone was about this artwork and also just the potential future of this tech, I guess. It's just amazing. And yeah. I got in, I was lucky to get onto Super Rare very early. Not very early in, as far as like other people who have made millions of dollars, but very early this year in that I'd put a few NFTs on Foundation. I managed to sell them. And then I knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy. And I think it's, to be honest, it's all because of Bain Art Gallery, because I guess I'm known in association with Bain Art Gallery and someone said, you got to put this guy in Super Rare. So I'm very lucky there. Because he's the guy who owns that gallery. I'm pretty sure that's what happened because I kind of shortcutted the whole process where you have to wait and all this stuff. And then I started collaborating with my friend Sim, who's Symbol, who made the most recent Toddler Pillar Mythos animation for us. And he started animating my paintings because I'm mainly an oil painter these days. And he was making these animations of my paintings and we're putting them on Super Rare. And like the first one sold for like 4.6 ETH or something, which was kind of mental. Yeah. And then, that's been, awesome. yeah, kind of, they've all sold at this stage, not for that much, but for, it's probably 2 to 3 ETH on average,
which is great.
Maybe 3 ETH on average. And then I was looking at this collectible space, and like I was sort of looking at it initially with a bit of, I don't know, disdain and arrogance, maybe. Fuck, people are going to like think I'm a dick for saying that. I was just looking at it thinking that there wasn't much art going on in it. It wasn't very artful, and it's sort of like everything looks the same as everything else. And I mean, there were some things like Lumps, like the Lumps project was like, this guy's obviously an artist and he's amazing. And he's got into the collectible space with his series. That was the main thing that made me think maybe I could do something in that space. Lumps is doing something really cool. And I think the Bored Ape Yacht Club project is really interesting and really cool. And there's definitely some others that I think are amazing too. But the vast majority are very, very generic. And they seem to be like anonymous tech teams who have hired some illustrator to just pump out some generic animals for a cash grab. But I don't even know how I thought of this, but I thought maybe I could do a toddler pillar collectible, but it's like, fuck, but I'm not a digital artist. I can't, and I don't have time. I'm running a gallery and I've got to, you know, I can't actually do this alone. And I thought maybe Tim could do this with me. And I'm just so grateful that he said yes. and he was really into it, and we just jumped right in. I knew Discord was important. I'd never been on Discord. I knew Twitter was important. I'd been sort of plugging my NFT shit, built up a bit of a thing on Twitter at that point just for my stuff. So I thought, okay, I better create a Toddler Pillar Discord and Twitter and figure out what I need to do to make this whole thing happen. I knew Twitter Spaces was important. I knew marketing was important. I have to fucking be interviewed by every single person and, you know, every opportunity or whatever.
Yep.
But the Discord thing, I think, was the biggest key. And I created a Discord for Toddler Pillars and just told everyone about it. And people started flooding in because we had a few samples of the artwork at that point, and people were intrigued because the artwork's amazing, because Tim's amazing. And they started flooding in. And then Jan, who's now the demigod of our Discord, came in and said, you know, if I was an investor and I looked at this Discord, I wouldn't have a lot of faith in this project. And it's kind of a mess. Do you want me to fix it up? Like, I'm not going to, like, you know, help you sell these things, but I can at least make your Discord look respectable. And that's where it started. Like, he did that. He made my Discord respectable. And and there were a bunch of other people who came forward, Haley and Garth, who were, well, Haley in particular, who had been following the Bain Art. It all comes back to the Bain Art gallery thing, because she'd been following the Bain Art Surreal Art Collective since 2013, and she was a bit of a fan, I guess. And she said, can I help you? And she became like one of the first mods, and then a few other people became mods, and it's just kind of blowing up. Like, this was what, 2.5 weeks ago, and now we're we're getting close to 1,000 members.
That's okay. So that's how long this has been. That's for that. Yeah,
it feels like my whole life has been this. Like,
the
intensity of this project has just been,
but that's NFT
from the go.
Yeah. Got to move fast in this space. And I was just, one thing before you, I thought it was impressive that, you know, obviously your background, you were talking about how you kind of got involved with computers and the internet and social, all that with your art early on. And then here you are now again, like with this. So it's kind of, it felt like it kind of lends itself.
I feel like when I was a teenager, I was an aspiring artist and computer nerd. So it sort of makes sense. Pretty into computers since I was very young. I was never very techie, though. I'm actually not techie at all, hence my disgraceful Discord.
But I think it's pretty organized. I mean, yeah.
I know marketing anyway. I know online marketing.
Go ahead and say that your program, the Discord, the community that you've built in 2.5 weeks, it is a phenomenal group of people, well engaged, who, and I think they're all in there because the art is so spectacular, because of the project that you've built, from down to mythos that that you've created around it, and the history that you bring, and then the detail of it. You're right. This isn't just the generic pixelated art projects or whatever else, the NFT projects that blow people's minds as far as why they're so popular. The level of art that is getting put into each and every one of these illustrations. Tim, I don't know how you're sleeping, how you're doing, but this is it is amazing.
Thank you. Like I wanted to bring the I feel like one of the main goals of this is to bring some of the artistry and the amazingness of the one of one NFT art world into the collectible space. That's kind of like my primary thing. I just feel like the collectible space can be much cooler than what it is, and that's why we're doing over 888 trades, so that there is a lot of art in it, you know, because I think most projects have 300 at most, or significantly less than that. Yeah, so that's why Tim's
very
tired.
That's a great point, to be honest, because when I first got into the NFTs, because art is so important to me, I stayed away from all the PFP stuff, and I was mostly just going to those artists that would release like maybe at most 100 edition of something. And so, but that's a good point that you're bringing up, that this is kind of, you do almost like a hybrid model of that, you know, you're doing the, you know, this could just be a PFP for somebody kind of thing, and it's going to be in the higher upper thousands, just like that. But at the same time, you're kind of doing something more than, you know, I don't know, the same image with 100 traits that are just switched around.
I'm, again, new to this, this whole thing. But what I'm not new to is surrealism, you know, and like what we're doing with this sort of the combinations that the algorithm will create is like, it's like the ultimate sort of exquisite corpse, you know, there's that old surrealist sort of, but it's like via the computer. And it's not, what's also exciting, I think, for the community and for John and I, like, hugely, is the way that we're getting people to suggest traits. Like, I think that's, I don't know if that's something that other people do, but it's,
I don't
it's
think
become a really big part of
anyone's done that.
I don't think so at all. It's usually everything is done behind closed doors, and like, you know, and then the community's brought in. Yeah, I don't think I've seen anything like that,
To explain what we're talking about, so in the Discord, there's a whole channel about suggesting traits, and that is just full of incredible suggestions. And I don't know, maybe Tim, can you give us an example of maybe your favorite one that you ripped out of that section and have recently illustrated?
There's so many.
It's not even possible for me to, if I was to just do things from this suggested trait and not my own ideas or John's ideas, I would need another like 3 months to produce them.
There's thousands in there. There's literally thousands.
But I mean, I don't know. Like
the army man riding the unicorn was pretty cool. Who was that? Was that Nikki?
Oh yeah, yeah. An army man riding a green army man riding a unicorn. That was just crazy stuff like that. And that's crazy in of itself. Well, you know, it's weird and strange in of itself. But then you have that in one hand, and then in another hand, you've got, you know, like a snake wrapping around an arm. And then in the chest, you've got my favorite one that I came up with, and I think I'm always going to be eternally proud of this, is Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre riding Falcor from Neverending Story.
I think Sean dubbed it the Neverending Massacre.
No, I was repeating Tim's. Came up with it, Neverending Chainsaw.
Neverending Chainsaw is what I have. Yeah. So your massacre is better. Neverending Massacre is better. But I mean, I think somebody
you suggested, have to change like, that now. Yeah.
Well, I did already. But I mean, you know, somebody suggested Falcor, somebody suggested Leatherface, and at another point, and that, you know, it's just about mixing and mashing all these things up.
Yeah.
And then how those things interact with whatever and whatever else we might put on the toddlerpede. But then when it goes into the algorithm and they get spat out when it all gets minted, like, what the hell are we going
to do? We have no idea what's going to happen.
It's so crazy to me. It's like, it's almost, you know, like the more mystical side of me is almost like, this is tapping into some like crazy, like consciousness archetypal sort of symbolism that part of me as an artist is very interested in, you know, archetypes and symbolism and surrealism is all symbolism and surrealism are my main bags. And this is like that on steroids and using the community's going to come up with. It's great.
I feel like the suggestor trait thing was probably an accident. There's a few accidents that have happened along the way, kind of like the gallery was an accident in that I just sort of, I don't know, I was trying to think of a giveaway on Twitter, and it's like, okay, maybe we can get people. And so one of the first giveaways was like, okay, the best 20 suggestions we'll include as traits, you know, and they will also win a toddler pillar each. And that kind of went, that was really useful in building our Twitter following and populating our Discord at the beginning, but also that kind of created this whole concept of involving the community. And I think it's made the community they're our collaborators. You know, you guys have a sense of ownership and sort of almost this whole PFP culture, actually inputting creative direction towards what the project is or what it's going to look like. That makes that even more, that makes that bond even stronger.
Definitely.
Do you know what I mean? So you guys are our collaborator. Yeah.
Steering towards the project details, the things that we can talk about, where about what you can say about like the mint, when it's going to be, the numbers, any of that stuff that you're obviously only what you're able to disclose right now.
The mint will be in early November. Well, I think the pre-sale is in early November.
Okay.
The public sale is probably mid-November. Maybe I think it's around the 11th of November. So we're giving the first 1,000 egg dwellers, which is our first rank. So basically, if you come into the Discord and say how you're going and have a bit of a conversation for 5 minutes, you become an egg dweller, you know. Then you're a part of the pre-sale if you're in the first 1,000 people who do that. And the pre-sale will also include toddler pillars, which is one of the higher ranks. So if you become a really active community member and work your way up to toddler pillar rank, which takes some work or some, well, it's not even work. It's fun, you know, like I think you got to toddler pillar rank in less than a week, didn't you?
Yeah, I did get to toddler pillar in, I don't know if I got, four. If it's probably four. Less than a week.
It was 4 days. You're insane.
Yeah, it was insane. I'm not going to lie.
That's insane. Most people, well, there's still only 18 or maybe 20 toddler pillars now, I think.
Yeah.
Out of over 900 people. So yeah. And so anyway, if you get to toddler pillar, you get to mint double the amount. So I haven't figured out exactly what that amount is. So pre-sale participants just say they get to mint 2 or 3 or 5, whatever it is, you get double that if you want. You don't have to. In fact, you don't have to do anything. But and if you get to Omnipillar, which is an insane feat, then you get to mint 3 times the amount that of other pre-sale participants. We haven't figured out exactly how many toddler pillars there will be yet. I can tell you at this stage, it's going to be somewhere between 8,888 and 9,999.
Sounds good. And
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know. And I don't want to decide on a price yet until I know what ETH is going to be worth at that time, because I want this thing to be accessible. And if ETH triples in price in before early November, I would like to be able to sort of sell this thing for less in the sale, because I don't want it to price people out, basically. Yeah,
definitely. I think that's definitely important. Some of the things that I've seen people do when they come into, you obviously already are familiar with NFTs and the space, but so you understand, like, you want to, you know, have it accessible to people and then let that secondary market build up on its own. If you price people out right away, it's just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I would say it'll sell for like 0.06, or in between 0.06 and 0.08. But I think that also depends on the price of ETH.
Awesome. So one of the questions that I've had come up a couple times, or that I'm like thinking, is, so the first 1,000 egg dwellers are going to be whitelisted, right? Mm. But, you know, and then you also have those kind of like a whitelist VIP for the toddler pillars and omni pillar. Mm. If people come into the Discord and we're already at 1,000 egg dwellers, but there's still time, could somebody theoretically get to toddler pillar and they're going to still be able to get in on the, like,
apparently they can do that in 4 days.
Yes. So you have to adjust
if they just live on there. apparently, but I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming you just were on there all the time, but which was great. You know, really, you helped build this community by doing that. You made everyone feel welcome. You were there all the time. As new people came in, there was someone there to keep them company. You know, and there's a bunch of people.
I'm spending so much time with the art that I'm not really on top of exactly what's going on. Exactly who is actually like a mod. I thought you were a mod for a while. you were more active than not to say anything bad about the mods, but
talks about how crazy I am.
It's a fun place to hang out though. There's always a funny fun conversation, you know, and or multiple conversations on the different threads.
There's actually really interesting people in there, really intelligent, funny people with dark humor. It's like I feel like the toddler pillars have become this magnet for like minds, you know?
Yes.
It's just like, I feel like it's funny. Like I wondered about the tribalism of PFP and how, I don't mean tribalism in a negative sense, but I was looking at it with curiosity. Like how could people who like a picture of an ape be so bonded, you know, become such a strong network of humans. But I'm seeing it happen around the toddler pillars and it's like, oh yeah, I mean the apes like make less sense to me, but not to say anything negative about the apes because I actually think it's one of the cooler projects in the space. Yeah. But it does make sense that people who like horror mixed with pop culture and freaky art and absurdity and you know almost Monty Python-esque kind of absurd humor and all of this stuff would get along with each other. That does kind of make sense, you know.
It's exactly like going to an opening at the Bayern Art Gallery, John. It's like every single person you speak to is cool because they're weirdos, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. It's the Bayern Art Gallery. Yeah.
It's kind of a nice niche, or, you know, about this because I like for instance the Bored Ape Yacht Club. That's like people that are they're kind of all celebrating together about. It's like, you know, it's like kind of like hip hop culture where they're celebrating, you know, yachts and money and this and that. Right. So they're bringing those kind of people together, whereas this is attracting a totally different kind of audience. It's not all just about, you know, that. It's like a different kind of a culture. So,
well, I hope that cool. I hope we can make some of you guys wealthy by all being successful together and then we can get a yacht as well, you know?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
The toddler pillar yacht club. Yeah, with a float. Yeah, we'll call it the float or the bog.
Well, yeah. I do want to be respectful of your time here and just really grateful for the conversation, just to enlighten us a little more as far as the minds behind the project that has inspired a short lived community at this point, like I said, only a couple of weeks, but really passionate going forward. And I'm personally fully invested, looking forward to the direction that this project takes us. I don't know, any last thoughts on the direction?
Should I speak to the roadmap slightly? Just so
absolutely.
I can talk about it. Like, I guess I think that for me, like I'm so in love with this project now that it's not going to stop here. So after Mint, I'm going to start working on with some of the money that's made from this. I'm going to work on a line of toddler pillar toys. Like kind of vinyl toys. I was even thinking maybe Mr. Potato Head style where you've got like the toddler pillar shape and you can like pin all of the different traits into the different areas.
Oh, that's awesome.
If someone wanted to do an animated series, I'd be totally into that. I think Adult Swim, I really feel like this should go on Adult Swim, you know.
I get that vibe too.
I really, really want that to happen. So yeah, I reckon we could do some sort of faux children's books, but obviously for adults, you know. We could do
Samuel Jackson's.
Go to fuck to sleep.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I think he just narrated that. That was someone else's project, but I love that. But kind of like, who's Chris Simpson? Chris Simpson, you know, the Chris Simpson who makes the comics that are like, he's really funny anyway, this absurd guy. He's great. You know, I feel like this is a potential, this is, I feel like it's a brand. And I feel like, I guess 100%. The thing is, it was a brand from 20 years ago that's being revived, you know, and it has a new look. It has a Tim Malloy look now. It's very different to what it was. And I think it's bigger and better and much cooler than it ever was. And I want to build this into a proper brand. Yeah. And awesome. Not just that, we've also got like the Animal Pillars, which is this our second series, which I'm going to give Tim a big break, but we'll probably, you know, aim to launch that around the middle of next year. And we'll be doing like a pretty hefty airdrop to toddler pillar holders of that, because it'll be like, it'll feed into the narrative and the mythology, because the Animal Pillars will be the companion animals that kind of like the toddler pillars' pets and best friends.
I feel like I've never seen this before with the project either, is before, you know, your roadmap even begins, there are some amazing perks you're already offering. You know, obviously Omnipillar with the first 40, you know, get signed limited prints.
The first five get toddler pillar watercolor paintings, original watercolor paintings by Tim Malloy too. Yeah.
It's so much. It's so much. Like I've participated in projects where you buy a piece and you maybe get like one of those kind of things, right? Like, and you're offering this before that process is even beginning, just for the people who are, you know, who are also getting to suggest traits and be involved in the community. So it's like that in itself is a reward too. It's huge. I mean, it's just, there's going to be a lot of people, I think, when this thing launches and more people find out about it, and then they're going to hear about all these things that were going on before it even launched. I mean, they're going to be like, whoa, I really missed out on this one.
Well, hopefully for those people, the next thing we do will be, you know, something that they can jump on.
Definitely. Well, you know? And also too, the other thing is, I guess where I should have continued on with that is that they'd be thinking, well, if they did all that before its beginning, you know, where is what, like, what else is going to be going on while this project is still going? So
another part of the roadmap that I haven't even added it to the roadmap yet, but I want a computer game. I want a toddler pillar game.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Do it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I just, you know, I just think it's so much fun. It's such a fun idea. Yeah.
I was joking in the Discord about it, but I was saying that we should do is, because it was a big hit back in the day, was make like a just basically like the game Snake, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever played those on the Nokia, and you're just stacking toddler pillars.
Yeah.
Not a AAA 90-hour serious story.
No, we should do like a legit game. That would be awesome. But
well, I was thinking
style map.
I was thinking the toddler, it should be on the blockchain, and it should involve tokenomics and something related to being a toddler pillar holder as well. You know, like, I think that's one of the things that's also only being this, only the surface is being scratched so far with the utility of PFP tokens. It's just starting, but these things are all going to be in the metaverse and actually being used in some, for some kind of utility at some point. You know, I want that for the future of toddler pillars too.
It's exciting, and it's really awesome to be a part of this and see where you're going to take it. And I think, you know, for anybody that's listening and hearing about this, you know, it's sounds like something you should definitely jump in and get involved with. At least pop in the Discord and come check it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, at this point in time, we really encourage everybody to go and first check out the art, gain some inspiration, come check out the community. You'll find that it's a bunch of passionate individuals and a strong roadmap in the future ahead. And it's something I think a lot of people getting forward can really get behind this project. If you really want to inspire as many people to get out there, I absolutely appreciate your guys' time. I appreciate all the work that you're putting into this project. There's no shortcuts as far as what I'm seeing as far as a you know, supporter and passionate person inside the group. You guys are doing everything possible to create a very unique experience, unique art, getting out into the world and leveraging kind of what the NFT craze has done, but really being art forward, really being community forward. And I appreciate it. And definitely appreciate your time today.
Thanks for so
you
much. Guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we'll have all the links to check everything out. We'll continue to press this over at thenerdcantina.com. Until next time, hey, thanks for listening, nerds. Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you. Such a pleasure. Lots of fun.
All right, I'll just take a quick minute to say thanks again to not only Tim and John for this phenomenal interview, but also Sean for helping me out here and joining me on introducing me to the Toddler Pillar team, getting me involved into NFTs in the first place, and then being a solid co-host for this episode. If you listen this far, You should be sold on this. Go find Toddler Pillars wherever you can. You can just do a quick search for them on Twitter and you'll come up with their Toddler Pillar handle, which will have links to everywhere that you need to go. Find them on Discord. You can also go to toddlerpillar.com and just start getting involved in the Discord community. Start paying attention to what's happening. It's not too late to set yourself up to be one of the first holders of this promising NFT project. I hope to see some of you over in the Toddler Pillar Discord, and some of you, I'm sure I'll see you over at thenerdcantina.com/community over there in our private Facebook group. Until next time, talk to you later, nerds.